All right, welcome everybody back into See Ball, Get Ball. I'm your host, David Pollock. Brent Rollins joining me as always. This is a fun time of year because now, Brent, in college football, we have trades. And we're going to discuss that, which is, I wouldn't be surprised if we got there maybe one day anyways, but Nico trades with Aguilar. Like, they just trade, literally.
I was funny because we – recorded on Monday, we couldn't go like truly live, so we recorded that Monday, and then 10 minutes after we stopped is when Aguilar says, all right, I'm going to Tennessee. So just how it works. But yeah, it's a whole new world, which though I got to give credit to so Brandon Zimmerman that works for SEC Network and does some stuff with Finebaum, Bo Nix to Oregon, and then Robbie Ashford going to Auburn, maybe sort of unofficially, but this one, given the lateness of it, is, and the, I guess maybe the public nature of it, is definitively the first trade that we've seen in this world.
Well, and yeah, for sure. And it's, you know, the Nico situation got plenty of attention, obviously, and that will continue to, but it's going to be interesting because now for Tennessee, if you're Tennessee, you got a guy with better numbers. You got a guy with more experience. But now you come into the situation, and here's the thing, you don't have to pay him as much. So if I'm Tennessee to win this, dude, I got to go spend some money and get some resources. Like, I got to get some weapons. I got to get weapons for my guy. Like, to make him see, I think so. Like, I know the run game will be good. I know the system is the system, Brent, but Tennessee lacked weapons a year ago. They need to get some weapons. That needs to be a priority. And if they can surround him with some good weapons, I think it'll be a plus. I don't think it will be a minus.
I don't disagree. My question is, one, who is that? And two, can they get it done in like 3 days or two, a couple days? Because the portal is closing.
Well, you got more money now. Like, that's the good thing, because the way the contract kind of works out, he's getting paid what he would have been paid at UCLA. But UCLA has already paid him a couple hundred thousand dollars, $200,000. So some of that salary's gone, so Tennessee saves a good bit of money. Now I need to go get some proven commodities. I need to go get some receivers that can make some plays for me.
So I like how you just went with that, because I have a devil's advocate sort of maybe alternate opinion regards to that.
What's that?
I don't think you're getting anyone in the next 3 days that is going to alter your season. And because of that, I would maybe take that money, and now granted that's the settlement and the cap and all the things that go with that, but I would take that money and put it into possibly put it into recruiting and look at it as a 2-3 year deal versus, because of the, hey, look, everything went down how it went down, I maybe have a little grace if I go 6-6 kind of thing.
Well, and the thing is, That's yes. If there's nobody out there that's an upgrade, like, right, that would be the difference. If there's nobody that's an upgrade, then yes, I can't go out and get them. I'm not going to waste money and then throw dead money around. But, you know, Tennessee is recruited at a higher level. They've made sacrifices. They've paid guys. Now it's been public about what Nico made, and he made a lot of money. Like, they were willing to be aggressive. And so I think continuing to stay aggressive, to build out a roster. I don't think Tennessee's roster as constructed is going to get back to the playoffs. I don't. Like, I think it's a roster. Like, last year, that defense was freaking good, man. Like, so good. And I don't think they'll be at that level because they're losing some depth and some key pieces. Offensively, they're losing their best player with their running back. You know, the receiving quarterback, the running back was insane. Samson was unbelievable. I mean, he was unbelievable. He was the best player on that offense. It wasn't even close. And when he got hurt in the playoff game, it sucked because we didn't see the best version of Tennessee that would have helped them at least be more successful, maybe make it more of a game. Probably not beating Ohio State anyways. But, no, it's going to be interesting because here's the thing. Who can learn all this stuff the fastest? That's why people are hiring GMs. That's exactly why. Because you've got to make that decision. Do I spend the money now? Do I spend it later? Like, what's the most important thing? That's why – when you say who's making the decision-making, if a coach is making the decision-making at all the spot and he's on his way out and he needs a good season, well, then he's going to push his chips to the middle for winning right now. Like, I've got to win or I get fired. If it's a GM, it's like, okay, well, here's the deal. I'm not throwing money at this because we ain't going to be that good anyways. Yeah, we might be better, but we're not going to be where we want to be. And so we might have to make a change. So that's where this becomes more and more interesting in college football, because it's going to be ran more and more like a business.
All right, let's look at it from the football perspective, specifically with Joey Aguilar, who in 2 years at App State, almost 6,800 yards throwing, 56 touchdowns, 24 interceptions, which, by the way, his 2 years, 24 interceptions, the last 4 years, you mentioned it the other day, but the last 4 years, Tennessee QBs, their primary one, 15 interceptions. And then also the turnover-worthy plays that PFF tracks. He's had 51 in 2 years.
Oy.
Tennessee, like, and a lot, and I need to go back and look, because the number of fumbles, he had 17 fumbles 2 years ago. That's, I've never seen a number that big. But anyway, 51 turnover-worthy plays in 2 years. Tennessee QBs in the last 4 years, 33.
Well, so
can you bring him closer to what you are as at normally?
I'll say this, and first of all, y'all that don't know, Brent works for PFF, so that's the kind of stuff. Those numbers are great, and they're such good context, and you want to look at those. But I also think you want to now boil it down to, okay, if you look at the reason why, Tennessee's offense eliminates a lot of that. Tennessee's offense stretches you from sideline to sideline. Tennessee is one of the most unique offenses in all of college football. Like, there'll be a lot of plays where their receivers, they're only running routes on half the field. Like,
yep.
Their mission is to go as fast as possible, which means they minimize the looks on the defense of what you're able to do. You ain't doing all this disguising and confusing. Like, if you do, you're screwed. So, like, they want to space you out. They want to open up passing lanes, open up running lanes, go fast, wear you the flip out. Like, so what that means is they spread the box. The box is usually thinner, but it also makes the looks really, really clean for QBs. So I think that's why they don't throw over the middle of the field a bunch, Brent, where they're putting the ball in harm's way. So these are all things that, and again, it sounds nerdy, but it really is. It's the reason why some people's numbers are way higher than others, because you're not putting the ball at risk in an offense like this at a high clip. It's not what they do.
And I think with Heupel, watching him over the years, and obviously as someone who works for the Georgia rival site and we do film breakdowns, staying on schedule is as much important to him as anything. He, like, second and 12 is the worst thing on the planet. He wants to live in sort of ahead of the sticks in a way. And if you got a half field read, oftentimes you see the quarterback throw the ball away to stay on kind of on schedule versus scrambling, making a play, or putting the ball in a contested catch type situation, unless it's way down the field. So that their system will limit his numbers, but that's what. So what's the best case scenario you think for Tennessee next year now? Cause we, by the way, we early in the offseason, we did a whole preview of Tennessee.
Yeah.
And that kind of just got flipped upside down with this. Yeah. We crashed.
We could trash that.
Video is null and void.
Yeah. I think it's, you know, listen, their schedule is still fortuitous. Like, they get good crossovers. And Brent, pull up their schedule so we can go over that, because I think that's still a big reason. They're still going to be good defensively. They don't lose their whole squad. Like, they were as deep as any team in the country. They're as deep as I've ever seen last year in the front seven. I mean, it was just rotate, rotate, rotate. It was crazy the number of guys that they brought in. So they're still going to be really, really good. Brent, I would argue this. Defensively, when I watch them, they're only going to get better, even with new faces in new places. Like, they had some guys that were not very athletic that were playing that you look at and you're like, that's a glaring weakness. And
yeah,
because their front was so good, you couldn't take advantage of the back a lot of the times. But I think that they'll get better by just recruiting. I think they'll get better by having more guys and more development and another year of development with those guys. But I think they're still going to be good, but there's the schedule right there. So go over, you can go over that.
Syracuse in Atlanta, ETSU dub, but big opening game now, which, by the way, I'm pretty sure I don't know if it's finalized, but it looks like Angeli's going to end up at Syracuse, the Notre Dame transfer QB. Georgia at home this year, UAB at Miss State, Arkansas at home, at Alabama, at Kentucky, Oklahoma at home, New Mexico State, then at Florida versus Vandy. The biggest thing, you get Georgia at home.
Schedule, man. Like, what a great freaking schedule. I mean, that's just like last year. That's a really good SEC schedule. I'm not saying it's a cakewalk by any stretch, but when your crossovers are Mississippi State and Arkansas
Vanderbilt.
And Kentucky and Vanderbilt and Oklahoma, like that's what you're getting as opposed to Florida, which is going to be much better. But, you know, those are the teams you're getting as opposed to, you know, perennial teams that like Texas, that's been the two Final Fours that you've seen, like LSU that you know is going to have firepower palooza, like South Carolina, who's, I mean, that's a good schedule for Tennessee.
Best case scenario to me, though, is 7-5, 8-4.
So you think they took a huge step back at quarterback?
Not a huge step, but enough to where continuity, unless he just picks it up quick, because maybe there is something to the offense where it's like, okay, it fits him, fits his skill set, and you're like, okay, we actually are okay. But if you do get a step back in QB play, plus, by the way, they're replacing almost the entirety of the offensive line, like that the running back, you mentioned Samson, we're going to talk about him later, by the way. So it's worst case is not good.
I would argue I didn't think the offensive line was very good last year either, but they still find a way to mask it like crazy. I mean, it's just because of their splits in their offense, like in the way they do it, and the way that it's more of a like second half run game than it is a first half. Like they're not going to line up and pound you, but their conditioning is going to present problems. Yeah. And their defense obviously got you three and outs last year and definitely played at an elite level. So I don't worry about that as much up front, but I think you're right. Like Nico threw in SEC play, I think it was six games he threw for 200 or less. Like that's not good. So I'm interested to see if you get the more bigger plays, because that's to me where this offense missed out. Like, can Aguilar deliver the home run plays? Because Brent, I can't tell how many times I wrote down home run play available, home run play available. And what did Nico consistently do? Underthrow those or overthrow those. He kept over.
He just didn't take it.
Those time and time again. So think about Brent, if you hit a few of those, you know, and if he can be that guy to do that, that will change the offense and it could make it better. But Nico's scrambling, Nico's calm demeanor and poise was really good. And then, you know, 2 years in the system, would have been a third year in the system. So there's a lot of give and take, but I think Tennessee fans, every single daggum one of them is like, yeah, I hear you. Give me Aguirre.
Aguilar,
yeah, give me him. Like, I'll take him.
Give me Joey
over Nico because of the whole situation and how it went out. And if I lose a couple extra games, I don't want Nico. Like,
yeah, I agree.
I think they would all be on board with that still.
And that's the main reason I made the comment about the money and how you spend it and how you use it, is because I think you've got kind of a grace period here. But speaking of the Iamaleava family, Nico's younger brother, Madden, who was at Arkansas, in the portal, now also at UCLA. So package deal in a way. And by the way, there was a great piece.
Family affair.
By Chris Lowe, Max Olson, Adam Rittenberg, and ESPN talking about just the process of Nico going, all the whatever source information that they got. The funniest part of the article, though, was at the end, is a Kansas State source told ESPN, "We got a DAMN wall built around him," as in Avery Johnson. "They better bring the Tennessee National Guard," because it was talking about how, you know, Tennessee potentially reaching out to others to see if it would be available in the portal, the QB. But it was also some quotes from Deshaun Foster as UCLA's coach. "Hey, look, we're being talked about. That's a good thing. People want to come play for us. That's a good thing." I think that they're looking at it as much of a stepping stone as anything. But yeah, the other part of the Nico and his brother situation is, like, you saw I think he's the AD for Arkansas. Like, hey, we're going to the buyouts within the NIL, and where kids take a little bit of the NIL and then they leave. We're going to pursue whatever actions they, so, you know, the family might be getting sued a little bit and not enjoy this whole process as much as they thought they would have.
Yeah. Well, and again, that's that, you know, struggle of power and struggle of rules, and, you know, where it would be nice if there was a contract between both schools that would take some of this out. And we're not going to beat that over the head, but where are we going next?
Texas adding again,
bigger and better in Texas, line. Baby.
Yes.
Yeah, so, rich get richer.
The Watson kid from Syracuse that was a freshman All-American defensive lineman put his name in the portal, and he ends up at Texas. So now that's five additions along the defense, which, by the way, they lost a lot along their defensive line. And you do those five additions plus Justice Terry, who was, you know, top 5-10 type recruit out of the state of Georgia. Your Steve Sarkisian knows where the bread is buttered, I guess you could say, in the SEC, and the ability to survive both the SEC as well as a now potentially 15, 16, whatever, how many game schedule that you got to play. You got to have defensive line depth. So you got Canoe from Ohio State, Brevard from Purdue, the Johnson kid we talked about last time from Maryland, Travis Shaw from UNC, who was a former big-time recruit, and then now Watson from Syracuse. So Texas portaling well and filling holes and filling depth.
I think it's interesting the route you go, Brent, because, like, there's two different routes I feel like these guys are going. So you're building depth. Like, I can go get a guy that was highly recruited, that has a lot of potential, that could turn into something good. Or to me, in the case, like, this is more the case of this. I go get a guy that was not as highly recruited, a three-star kid, went to Syracuse, but went and played it. I'm like, dang, that kid's good. Yeah. So I think, you know, you bet on the traits and the highly recruited coming out of high school, and you think he's going to turn into something, or you can go get these guys too that have gone, they go prove it, man. Like, they prove they're worthy of the rotation. They prove that they're better than coming out of high school than you thought they were. Now, the problem for Syracuse, which sucks, is you develop them, you coach them, and then they go to Texas, which is another way. But that, I think that's a different, there's two different ways to look at it in the portal from the defensive line. I think those are the main two ways that people are looking at.
They earn their raise, basically.
Yeah, you want to put it.
it's the reality of it. I would, you know, in terms of the coach aspect of that, it'd be great to talk to coaches and ask them. And also, like, one of the things I've written about in the past, I think there should be, you come out of high school and you should have to stay for at least through two football seasons when you sign out of high school. You know, these kids that get 1 year pop on that 1 year, you've all that time and relationship. But maybe, by the way, now those relationships from a recruiting standpoint, it might not be as big of a deal because it's just like, okay, what's the number? Am I going, is it good enough or is it not? There was one thing we didn't get a chance to talk about last week, was a rule change. And it's a rule change that we've kind of talked about needing, but I don't know if that everybody's either in agreement, but it is what it is. But the NCAA approved the changes to prevent players from going, you know, the faking of injuries in a way, or slowing down offenses that are play at a fast tempo, which that's kind of the whole reason for it for the most part. So starting in 2025, a team will be charged a timeout if its training staff enters the field to look at a player who has gone down after the ball was spotted for the next play. Player goes down after the ball is spotted. Team doesn't have any timeouts. It's a 5-yard penalty.
Your thoughts? And that's the thing to listen to. It's after the ball's spotted. It's not.
Yes, I emphasize that for that reason.
Yeah, that's where we're trying to clean this up and make it better, because it's when the ball's spotted, everybody's going fast. You look to the sidelines, you can tell the defense ain't ready, and then that hammy comes in, bro. Like, that just, whoa, that thing grabbed a hold of me, right? Like, guys going down, like, they got sniped. I love when, like, two or three guys go cramps. Down. The signals got crossed, and you're just like, wait a minute. There's, like, three guys down right now. And it's interesting, by the way, that all the pictures of this rule change, when you look at them all, it's always Ole Miss players. Why is it Ole Miss players, like, on the rule change? Like, that's interesting.
Because sometimes the teams are doing it to them.
Yes, 100%. And they'll absolutely do it too. So, you know, if you're doing it and you're a team that is notorious for having it done to you, it's amazing. That shows you how valuable it is. Because, listen, it steals time. It steals breath. It gets you organized. It allows you to substitute. There's a lot of good things that happen when you fake that injury. So Now, you know what this does, Brent, is it swings more power back to the defense or back to the offense, which because the defense is trying
you
to
find ways. You instantly don't like.
No, the defense is trying to find ways to cheat. But here's the thing. When the defense uses a rule to its advantage, a la the Dan Lanning rule, the defense gets that gets changed in season, for God's sakes. Like Dan in Lanning week. Did that to Ohio State, and like 3 minutes and 67 seconds later, so 4 minutes and 7 seconds later, the rule was changed. Like,
good math.
It's amazing because, listen, offense sells tickets. They want the advantage to be to the offense. So, you know, anytime you can trick the offense or gain a little bit of power back, because again, I'm a defensive guy. Yes. See ball, get ball. That's what it's from. Defense, see ball, get ball. Here's the thing. They've got all the advantages, all of them. Like they can move, they can shift, they can motion. They can decide when the ball is snapped. They decide who carries the ball. Like they decide all those different things. They've tried to give us the ability to not stem anymore. They tried to do that last year. We can't even move before the snap. Screw you. Like, whatever, bro. Like, how is that a thing? Like, how can you tell me I can't shift and I can't motion? Like, when you move, it changes my responsibility, and sometimes I have to move. So, again, rules are bent towards offense. This will gain the offense a little bit of power back, which is exactly what everybody wants.
Let's take this from the coach's perspective, especially the defensive coach's perspective, because that's one thing that you are, at the high school level at least. How do you maybe do this if you want to? Is it something where, hey, if it's third and seven, you have a tag call for if they pick up a first down on a big – or if it's a – you know, like Tennessee. We've talked about Tennessee already. Tennessee is notorious for if they get a first down
and
it's
down
around the 38, 39-yard line, it's fast as can be and we're taking a shot. Is that a, hey, we got to know that and you got a game plan ahead for that, or you got to have a call on the previous defensive call that's, hey, if they get a first down here, somebody's taking a dive?
Well, I don't think you can go that far because you're thinking about your calls, you know, in the moment. But every single game plan, just like, for example, teams that go fast, back in the past, the only way you could sub, so a long pass down the field, you know, a long pass towards your sideline, a great opportunity that you can sub people really quickly. Like everybody's got to run to the ball and go 30, 40 yards down the field. So as a defensive coach, man, you're stealing any chances you can. And so you got to understand the tendencies. Like Tennessee, just a great point, what you just mentioned. Okay, well, here's what's going to happen to me. The answer to this is big play. They're hurrying up. Don't let them spot the ball. Like, we've got that built in. Now, it'll take more precision, and you'll have to do it faster, but that's the beauty of the rule. That's what's good, is it will take away some of the borderline fringe ones when it's so obvious. Like, it is so obvious. Even to the untrained eye, you're like, that was awful. That
the
was
announcers like, have to, like, make a comment about it kind of thing. Oh, yeah. I mean, oh, really? Got it there.
Because it's that bad. And so now I think – you better be hyper-organized of when you want to pull the trigger and use it, and it will be first downs. It will be tendencies. It will be big plays that you know they're going to, you know, hit the gas on those type of things. That's what you have to do as a defense. You got to steal those moments to gain the advantage back and to slow the tempo down and maybe change the rhythm for your squad.
All right. So it's a big week outside of college football, and really for those that love college football, it's still a very big, big week. And tomorrow is a very big night, and that is the first round of the NFL draft in Green Bay, no less. So it's interesting that I think they've decided that the Super Bowl goes in the warm city and the draft goes to the cold cities now, because like Detroit, Cleveland recently getting the draft. But which was it, Cleveland that you had to go to that was
yes
frozen
when that's you did the draft? That's the one me and Palmer were talking about. Like we were making our
yes,
picks
I thought
and,
so.
Like our lips were like, it was ungood.
All right. So before we get into some other stuff with the draft and players that we love that maybe aren't as high on in the consensus, I got some trivia for you.
Okay.
Some draft trivia.
Are you a draft lover? Like, do you love to sit down and watch like all of the draft, or are you watching the first round, or like what's your draft viewing?
It's it's gotten less as I've gotten older.
And because of social media, probably.
Exactly. Because it's easier to follow there. And plus, oftentimes when it happens, I'm at a baseball game or something like that. So I'm just, I know last year when the Falcons made the Penix pick, I was in the drive through at Chick-fil-A coming back from a baseball game.
Were you pissed?
And no, I thought it might be a possibility, honestly, because just they're weird like that. But anyway.
Because, you know, we
when I was a kid, though, it was, I wrote down everything as a kid.
Because we could, well, you're a nerd, so was I. But like, yes. So we watched as a Falcons fan because we're from Georgia, and you're like, you know what? The year before, we're like, we're a quarterback away from going to the playoffs. So what did we do? We took two. That's take one.
Gave one a ton of money and then took another.
$60 million. And yeah, it just perfect. It makes perfect sense because you can play one. It sounded completely perfect for a Falcons fan.
They were either going to be the newest trend in football and the sort of draft and develop piece, or they were going to be the biggest jokes in football. And I think it turned out the ungood way, as it normally does for the Falcons. All right, trivia. I want to see if you can get these right. Who was the 17th pick in the 2005 NFL draft?
Well, that was easy. That was a layup. That was me.
Okay. Who was the 16th pick?
Dang it. I know the 18th. Or 18th was Erasmus James, I think.
So I was going to ask you that one too. So 18th was Erasmus James. Yes, that is correct. Who was the 16th pick? One pick before you in the 2005 NFL draft.
I also know, by the way, the 21st pick. Or 24th, Aaron Rodgers. 24th,
yeah.
Aaron Rodgers was 24. Obviously, Alex Smith was one. Ronnie Brown was two. Braylon Edwards was three. What team was it?
The Houston Texans.
The kid from Florida State. Travis.
Johnson.
Travis Johnson.
You were correct. Travis Johnson.
Bang, bang.
Who was the 14th pick in that draft?
What team?
Carolina.
So I got a good
supposed
story.
To know this.
I got you're a good story about this one, by the way. So it was Thomas Davis from Georgia. I called Thomas the night before the draft, and me and TD are great friends. Man, me and TD were cut from the same cloth. Like, we love ball. We love to play. We love to hunt. Like, so many things, not like hunt fishing, like hunt football, like hunting fish and stuff, not that stuff, to be clear. But I called him. I called him the night before the draft. I was like, "Hey, Pokey, I just want to tell you, bro. Like, congratulations. I'm excited for you. I probably won't call you tomorrow, but like, there is nothing wrong with being the second player drafted from the Georgia Bulldogs this year. Like, I'm proud of you, man. Like, that's a big accomplishment from you. From where you come from where you're at. Like, you should take a lot of pride in that. And I can't say the response what he said to me, all of it, but like, he was basically like, you know, boop boop, Humpy, take that." And I swear to goodness, as soon as TD got picked, I got a text immediately. Second player, huh? And I was like, "Dadgum it!" So I was running my mouth, and I definitely shouldn't have on that one.
So one other question there, and by the way, he was the next in line answer to this question. Who is the only player from that draft class who is still active?
Aaron Rodgers.
And those listening, I put active in air quotes because he's. Kind of
he's
not.
He's currently not on the team, right?
He has no team right now. But yeah. Yes, he is. He is the Lone Ranger who's still technically active. Before that, by the way, though, 2020, Alex Smith, Thomas Davis, Frank Gore, by the way, also lasted till 2020. So, can you imagine playing the NFL right now at your age?
Well, considering I made it a whopping 2 years, no, absolutely not.
All right, so one of the things before the draft, or to talk about the draft and to look at it from a different angle, because we've talked about different things, I asked you to give me a sort of my guys list, and not necessarily like the top guys. And I get if you want to say that, fine. If you know Travis Hunter is one of your guys, okay, he should be one of everybody's guys. But who are some of the DP sort of my guys that there's going to be a maybe a second round pick or a late first round pick or even a third round pick that you think are just going to be really good in the league?
The first guy that stands out to me that I wrote down is Derek Harmon. A guy from Oregon. He played 2 years at Michigan State. So you saw him in college a lot. Like, dude's put together now, you know, 6'4", 6'5", 315, really good twitch, plays the game hard, strong. Like, if he didn't have injuries, Brent, I feel like this is a guy that would be probably a little bit higher on the list, but I have no doubt. Like, this is a plug and play guy. Like, this is a guy that when I draft him, I plug him, I play him. He's a 10-year starter. He's going to be a great player. Probably, definitely a Pro Bowl player, because everybody makes the Pro Bowl nowadays. But like a guy with a chance to be all pro, to be a dominant defensive tackle force when he continues to develop and bring more moves to the table, because I love the intangibles. I love the size, the length, the quickness, and I love the way he plays the game. So I think he's a can't miss guy. And he's a Raven. Like, he's a guy that slips down, a Steeler, like, and you're just like, where did this ace kicking Jesse come from? And how does he slip to the Ravens? Like, he's that kind of a, all of these guys, by the way, in my head, that's what I said, is who's a Raven type guy? You know, like a football player that it might not be all of the 40 and the measurables and all that stuff, but you know good and well, like, it's plug and play. They're great players.
I thought he might be in play for the Falcons at 15. And because they
kind of zag. I think he'll be there at 15. And I would support that pick from the Falcons in a heartbeat.
Yes, because
isn't
I don't.
Isn't there a quarterback they could take, though? They could probably take Shador there.
All right. First one for me was, all right, so let me ask you this question. Of the guys from Georgia who are going to get drafted, who you think is the most likely one to be a Pro Bowler? Or first one to be a Pro Bowler?
Malachi Starks.
Because my answer to that is different.
Okay.
And my number one, my guy, I think he's going to be really, really good in the league, is Jared Wilson, the center. I think his athletic traits, and I think he's just scratching the surface of what he's going to be. And to me, he can be almost, I hate to put that on him, but in terms of how he's used, Jason Kelce-like. With the way he's able to move,
and I'll be honest,
be athletic.
I don't, you know, the center part, you know, is different. You know, you think about like guy who's the guy for the Chiefs? Is it Creed Humphrey, the center?
Creed Humphrey. Yeah,
he comes in and makes their offensive line elite by just being a baller and being athletic. So I think he'd be good, but Malachi Starks is on my list too. And he's on my list because
he's a typical Raven, by the way, I think.
Again, all these guys are Ravens for me. But just like, it's not like all the things I wrote down when I wrote down Malachi, I wrote down savvy, smarts, poise, ball skills. Like, it had nothing to do with athletic traits. And you watch him as a freshman high point that ball against Oregon, you're like, whoa, and contort his body. Like,
game one.
Now listen. He played out of position this past year, and he did more, you know, in the slot. And I think because of that, you saw him. I mean, he got beat more, and he missed more tackles this year than you've seen, and kind of exposed him. But I'll tell you this: middle of the field safety, judging a football, breaking on a football, smarts, competitive nature, broski. He'll be an All Pro, 100%. He'll be a great player in the NFL.
All right, just give me the rest of your list, and then I'll give you mine. We'll see who stands out amongst those.
Okay. Tyler Booker was on my list because I think without injuries, the Alabama offensive guard, just big, strong, long sucker. Like, he moves people off the screen. He's very physical. Love him. Walter Nolan. Love Walter Nolan. Like, I mean, the size and the athletic, the quick twitch first step from Walter Nolan – at 6'3", 305, like, that dude is
there's a reason he was the number one recruit in the country.
He's going to be an kicker. Like, he's going to work people over and be great. And then I wanted to go off the board way down the list of somebody that caught my eye watching college football this year that nobody would talk about. Noel Williams. Bet you didn't have him on your list. Noel Williams from Cal. Like, super, super long. First of all, Wilcox puts out guys. Like, he always puts out corners. He's one of those guys that, like, he ran a 4.50, which ain't spectacular. Super good length. Ball skills for days. Led the nation in interceptions. But just a guy that has that, like, savvy, that feel, will play man-to-man, will be really, really good. He's a guy that we'll talk about, like, how the heck is he that good when he's in the NFL? And he won't be a first-round pick and maybe even not a second-round pick.
That's a great pull. So the rest of my list, Mason Taylor, there's so much love given to Tyler Warren and Colson Loveland right now as the tight, those tight ends, and even some others. I think he's just the lineage, the ability. I think he's going to be a 12-year vet that's, you know, makes multiple Pro Bowls as a tight end. Especially after Tom Rinaldi told us the story and we talked about it. Jack Besh, I'm a fan. Like, dude's playing for his brother. Like, he's always going to have a little something extra.
Yeah.
And then the name that you mentioned earlier, I think, is RB2 in this draft, and that's Dylan Sampson.
Yep.
He's not going to be picked RB2, but I think he is. A couple others.
RB2 is strong.
That's strong.
By the way,
we'll get to that question in a minute. That's the last little bit.
But I will say this, like, the interesting thing about all of this, it's just like the quarterbacks, dude. Like, the ones that go to the right teams and the right fits that aren't necessarily the highest picks all the time. Like Aston Jinty, baller. Everybody knows it. If he goes to the Jaguars, okay. Like, we won't talk about Aston Jinty. Like, right? Like, it just will be – maybe he'll put up good numbers. He could put up good numbers, but it's going to be hard. But some of these teams, man, like, if you go to the Chiefs, whoever goes to the Chiefs, you're going to – whoever plays for the Eagles with Hurts and company, obviously, in the rosters that are built, the Ravens, whoever plays there, like, there's just – so many teams where you're built in to have success, and there's a lot of teams where you ain't built to have success. And so if you give me the destination too, that helps.
Yeah. All right. So three other quick other ones. Cody Simon, the backer from Ohio State. I think he's going to be a guy that hangs around, that won't get drafted till like maybe the third, late third.
That's an underrated baller in that defense. He took care of the middle, man. Everything.
You mentioned Walter Nolan. I went JJ Pegues. Athlete.
Big JJ?
As a defensive lineman that maybe has a role as a short yardage guy in the NFL and gets some touchdowns. And then lastly was Breshard Smith. His skill set, the combo of running back receiver, just finds a way to exist in the NFL for a decade or six, 7 years. All right, so some last ones, some just questions, and we'll mark your answers just to see how good you are at this. We already did the QBs over-unders, which, by the way, I'm hearing more and more that certain quarterback is falling. So do you think Shador goes in the top 15?
No.
Yes or no?
No. I haven't thought that all along, and no part of me has changed that opinion whatsoever. And again, it's not because of prime time. It's not because of anything else, because I worry about the pocket presence. I worry about the leaving a good pocket. I worry about the pushing the ball down the field. I like the accuracy. I like it. He's shown some toughness too, to take some hits and continue to compete, but I don't think he's a elite level quarterback. I'm not spending that kind of pick on him. I'm not in a draft where I've got other guys that I can get that are going to contribute right now and be ballers.
All right. Another one that's kind of, I've seen picking up steam a little bit. Do you think Jalen Walker gets in the top five?
No.
Okay. I've seen a lot of him to New England at four, or maybe even at five, or more so at four there. All right, so who's the first quarterback that is not named Cam Ward that gets drafted? Because, by the way, I went on site to see some of the odds, just to kind of get some names and see who might be. It's basically,
I mean, Jackson Dart has to be next, right, in the odds?
No, Shador is the favorite.
Well, no, outside of Shador. I know Shador's next.
Okay, so you think it's Cam, Shador, and then Dart in terms of that? At least?
I would be okay if someone took Jackson over Shador. I would be. It would not hurt my feelings, and I would not be like, oh my gosh, that's blasphemous.
All right, so here's the next one. First running back not named Aston Jinty in his draft.
Hampton.
The North Carolina kid?
Oh, my gosh. That dude, he runs – he's got some gifts. I mean, he's going to be – I think he's going to be elite. Like, he's got some juice, bro. He's going to be very, very fun to watch. And people are going to be – again, he's another one that will be like, where did he come from? Like, where – North Carolina? Like – yeah, and he had some juice. It's his system, and they weren't great, but that dude runs the rock like he stole it, and he's bigger than you think, man. That's a big, strong sucker that runs away from people, runs violently, breaks tackles, like has a good feel for people. Like he's a baller, man.
Total running backs in round one, over under 2.5.
The class is so deep and it's so good. But I still think there's that stigma, man, with the running backs. I think people will push it down the list because the class is so deep and the value is not high enough. So I'll take the over. Or I'll take the under.
Under 2.5.
Again, running backs, it's such a, I can find these guys in later rounds that can be contributors time after time. We've seen it. And there's a longer list, I think, of guys in this draft. So I'm going under for sure on that.
All right.
We keep a track of all the draft.
Yeah, I wrote it down. I did write it down.
Sweet. Yes. Throwing darts at the wall. See if they stick. But
I do. Well, one last thing about the draft. It's fascinating to watch these videos and you see the general managers and the coaches talking while they're on the clock.
It's and so like, cool.
Well, it is, but it's also like you would think it's some high level. They have all this information and they're running models and they're doing all these great things.
When it's a chart, every video, bro.
Well, every video is just two guys being like, "Hey, you want to do this?" They want another third. They want a fourth. Yeah, you good with that? We're good. Okay, good. Like it's now. Granted, they've talked about it and prepped it, but it's like two guys at a bar just hanging out talking versus this just sort of high level thing.
And they have the chart too. Like they're very much what you would love by the numbers. Okay, you want to make the draft more watchable for me, Brent? That Ladd McConkey video you tweeted out, the Justin Jefferson from a couple years ago when they traded up when Galloway got taken, when it Kenneth Galloway that got taken or the receiver from
Rager. Rager got taken before him.
Rager got taken from TCU to the Eagles. Like Minnesota was like, oh my God. Like, you want to make me watch the draft? Show me the rooms. And again, do it after the fact. Do it after they've made the decisions, but show me the rooms where they traded up and they were like, so we just got a steal. The Rams did it a couple years ago with the kid that got drafted, the big Fisk. Strong sucker that looks Braden like Cooper Fisk. Cup.
Oh, Puka Nacua.
Puka Nacua. Like, they were like, that's our guy. Like, that's our guy. Athletic ability, thickness. Like, we love him. He'll block. Like, that. You see the videos. That's what I would love to see. But that would make me watch the draft more. Like, when you watch more draft rooms. And, again, record it. Play it later so you don't play it live so you're not getting intel, which would be, you know, everybody's psychotic about the intel and it'd be a game changer and it'd be an advantage. But that would be – that'd probably be the only way you'd probably keep my eyeballs for the draft.
And I'm hearing this. I'm hearing that.
Yeah.
Sources tell me this. Sources tell me that.
Yeah.
Well, it's all just
– But it's cool, man, because I tell you what, like there's so many people's dreams that are coming true tomorrow night and it's fun to watch. And I can tell you as being one of those guys, it's surreal. Like it's surreal because you dreamed about it for so long and you're like, they just called my name. And then your teammates that are there are calling you and you're like, yeah, I mean, Chad Ochocinco was, I remember that call. Like, I mean, like it was yesterday and Carson Palmer and just, you know, you immediately start a new family, like a new city. You're moving. Like there's so many new things to it. That's really, really cool. And what else is really cool, Brent, too, is it's good to see C-Ball Get Ball getting some traction. Like we're moving up the charts a little bit. We're going to be the only one with a meathead name there at the charts, but we're doing good and we're getting better. And we appreciate y'all listening, man, because y'all are definitely the reason we get to talk it and we have so much fun talking about it. And we'll continue to do so. So we'll see you next week and we'll have all kinds of college stuff. The portal will be closed officially. And actually the portal. Yeah. I mean, we can talk more about that. I'm sure there'll be more to it and all the stuff that comes with it, but we'll see you guys later.